This is Franz at the Travel Trade Exchange podcast. In this interview, I talked to Tanya Abbey, who at the age of 18 sailed around the world. A great interview, an interesting person to talk to. But before we get to the interview, I want to encourage you, the listener, to submit your own travel stories, either in written form or in an MP3 file, uploaded to franz@traveltradeexchange.com. I will review them as long as they are not offensive. I will post them, and then you can share them with your friends and family, and they can download them to their own iPod or their own MP3 device for listening at their convenience. So thank you very much, and let's get on with the interview. This is Franz with the Travel Trade Exchange. I'm talking with Tanya Abbey. Is that how you say your last name, Abbey?
No, Abbey.
Abbey, okay. Tanya, at the age of, 18, left Manhattan and sailed around the world. She sailed 27,000 miles on a 26-foot boat. She left from lower Manhattan and arrived back, 2 years later?
Mm-hmm. 2.5 years later, about 24 years ago now.
And then
25 years ago.
Then wrote a book called Maiden Voyage, which is talking about that trip. So, Tanya, tell us about the trip. Tell us about your adventures.
In 3 sentences or less.
No, in about a half an hour, or as long as you want to go. That's no time limit here.
Like you said, it started when I was 18. It was my dad's idea because he thought I wasn't on any kind of college track or any academic-minded track. And wanted me to have something going on. And with teenagers of my own now, I know how that's kind of important for a parent. But this was his idea of a single-handed sail. And he came up with it in the middle of the Atlantic when he bought a boat right around the time I was finishing up high school and not making any plans for the future. He was going through his midlife crisis. And decided to buy a boat and sail it across the Atlantic. And I ended up doing that trip with him. And siblings and family friends came for different legs of the journey. But I did the whole thing with him. I really liked it. I hadn't known the sailing life before that. And came to know it and love it. And it was out there in the middle of the Atlantic that he saw this happening and decided to make the offer if I wanted to sail around the world by myself. And at first, I didn't say yes right away. It took a while to think about it and to imagine it. And I spent another 5 or so months on the boat sailing through the Caribbean and back up to New York through storms and calms and having more of the sailing life experience. And then coming back home to New York and meeting back up with friends I hadn't seen much of in the past year and talking to them and finding out that a lot of them had plans and were moving on. And then going to visit my mother, who at that point had cancer already and wasn't long for the world, and talking with her about it and realizing that she thought it was a good idea and that you only do live once. And this was probably a chance I'd never get again. And if I didn't do it, I'd regret it for the rest of my life. And all those things conspired to make me say yes finally one day.
So when you sailed across the Atlantic with your father, where did you leave from and where did you arrive?
He bought the boat in England and we sailed from there to Portugal, Spain, Morocco, the Canary Islands, across the Atlantic to the Caribbean, up through the Caribbean Islands to Bermuda, back to New York.
So, okay. What kind of boat was that?
Nice long trip. It was a Rival 38, an English-built boat, nice boat. Nice, sturdy, good boat for a whole family to learn how to sail with.
Is your father still sailing today?
He does not have a boat, but he does. He has his own adventures still. He's off. He's never stopped his midlife crisis. He's been having adventures ever since.
So when you left from lower Manhattan and you went, did you go through the Panama Canal and that way around, or which direction did you go?
My itinerary was New York, Bermuda, St. Thomas, Panama, through the canal to the Galapagos, across the South Pacific to the Marquesas Islands and French Polynesia to Tahiti, and then American and Western Samoa, and then Wallace and Futuna Islands, and then Vanuatu, and then Australia, and then over the top of Australia to Bali, Christmas Island, and then back north across the equator to Sri Lanka, and across the Arabian Sea to Djibouti, and then up the Red Sea, stopping in Sudan, and then on to Egypt, and through the Suez Canal, and then across the Mediterranean, stopping in Greece, Malta, Spain, Gibraltar, and the North Atlantic back home.
Okay. You've got that down pretty well. That's when you think about it, and this has been a few years since you did it, do you have any specific memories of people you met along the way that made a difference in your life?
Oh, totally. I mean, it was 2.5 years of living, and like the book calls it, it was a coming of age experience. I was 18 when I left, 21 when I got back. So those are pretty big years in growth. So I learned a lot, and I made a lot of friends that, and some of whom I married one guy. He became my husband and the father of my kids. And, there's other people. There are some other people I'm still in touch with. But yeah, people were my teachers, whether they were other sailors or people ashore. That was my education. That was what the book also and everybody else has been likening ever since to a college education. Oh, when Tanya was 18, her father offered her a choice, a college education or solo sail around the world, and Tanya chose the boat. So anyway. That wasn't my story, but that's the way it became told in a nutshell. And so, as a college education, I mean, it definitely, you know what? It earned me subsequently when I what finally did go back to college, it earned me a year's worth of credit. So,
So you only lost 1 year of college then.
I gained a year from that trip. So, when I went back to college, it took me. Well, and then I also passed those CLEP exams. So I went back to college and I got my undergraduate in 2.5 years
Okay.
based on life experience and tests and stuff that I
So you went up through the Gulf of Aden, up through the Suez Canal. Did you have any problems with pirates along the way through there, since we're having so many trouble right now, so much trouble right now?
No, I never saw any pirates. And the Red Sea was more troublesome because of the weather and the contrary winds. And engine troubles, but people everywhere were. I never had people trouble. People are good. I know that from that trip and the rest of life. The media, everything. It's just our world likes to make us think we need to protect ourselves from each other. And that wasn't the case with for me.
When you think of your trip, do you have a favorite location that you stopped at? I mean, the South Pacific sounds wonderful. You conduct charter trips today, and you tend to concentrate in Greece and Turkey. Would you go other places if you had the choices, or what are your thoughts on the places you visited? Do you have particular favorites?
I had my favorite was French Polynesia because I spent the most time there in Tahiti and Moorea. But I actually did do a trip there. I once did a chart one of my organized trips took place there. I did another one once in New Zealand, but it's just that it's much further and more expensive to go there. So I do trips that are a little easier for people to go for just a week or 10 days. Go to the South Pacific for 10 days. It's an awful long way to go. And I've done Thailand too. I've done trips that are far away, but people who get a 1 week vacation, that's a long ways to go and quite pricey too. But I love the French Polynesia. I go back there. I went back there again with my kids when I took them sailing for a year. The goal was to get to French Polynesia and spend some time there again, show them that part of the world.
Did you sail back down again? Or did you charter a boat down there?
No, I took the boys out of school for a year in 2007, it was 2007, 8. They were homeschooled, and I took them halfway through the year. We went from the Caribbean to Tahiti, and then their father, Olivier, took over for the second half and sailed from Tahiti to New Caledonia with them. So they had a year of sailing to see a little bit what the stories their parents had been talking about for their whole lives. What those stories were all about.
How old are your children now?
now they're too old to do that anymore. That was really like the last year to do it. Did it the last minute. Another under the wire story for us. But they're 20, almost 21 and 18 now.
Okay.
So,
What
and
kind of
both are looking into marine engineering. So the trip affected them a little bit.
Where are you happy with your decision? It sounds to me like your father made the decision for you and you went along with it. Do you agree with that, or was it?
It was his idea, but in the end, I had to agree and go. So that was my decision. And then in the end, once I left and was living the day-to-day reality of it, every decision was mine. So yeah, he was a big force behind it, but once I was out there, it was me. And if he hadn't have done it, I wouldn't have had this great story to tell, this huge experience I lived. And I wish I could have been that brave and have that much faith in my own kids. But that was a highly unusual thing for him to do as a parent. And in the end, it gave me a great start in life, really.
Sounds like it. And I'm looking at your website, and it looks like you live in Vermont and you live out in the country. Tell us about your lifestyle now.
Well, a couple times a year, I still get back on boats and take people. I'm a licensed captain, and that's been true ever since I got back, pretty much. About 97, I started organizing these trips. So that's been a while now. And so I go out a couple times a year, take people sailing, and the rest of the time I do bookkeeping and property management, and I keep writing here, and I've been raising the kids, and we got chickens and property to mind, and I live in a small community of neighbors among whom are quite a few sailors, actually.
Really? Is that how far away
Some
from?
connection for people who've lived on boats. When it's not a boat, it needs to be country, and it's beautiful.
Looks like a beautiful area. A lot of pine trees around your property, and it looks like you've got a garden, and pretty much like a homestead almost.
It's a little bit like we're on the grid. We got electricity, and but the water comes from a well. It's not quite like being on a boat. There are elements, though, of so resourcefulness and a little bit of independence from this infrastructure here, but
Did
not entirely.
you read the book The Dove by Robin Graham? I'm sure you did at some point in time.
Yes, of course. I've read a lot of those sailing books, yeah. Homework.
What?
That's my homework. I
That's what
write
you.
about sailing. I got to read what other people said.
So have you booked any trips for this coming year with the groups?
I have not done, I have, I'm doing my one. For the past several years, I've been working with this guy, bringing his boat with crew to Bermuda. And so I'll do that. But I haven't planned any of my own trips for this year, because I really did want to try and use this year to get some writing done. And
You're
every time I go on a trip, it's a bunch of time preparing it, all the admin side of getting it ready and then going. It's just, I don't know, I didn't feel like doing one this year, actually.
Okay, what are you writing? You writing a new book then?
Trying to.
What's it about?
Life, sailing, kids.
Okay, so we can look forward to that then.
Yeah, it's nonfiction again.
Did you grow up in New York or New Jersey, or are you from Vermont?
No, I was born in New Jersey. We lived there until I was about 9, and then we lived in Switzerland, and then we moved to New York.
So you've done a lot of international travels, even as a young child, it sounds like.
Well, both my parents are European, so there was that connection to going back to family there. And they traveled. We traveled. But it was mostly between here and Switzerland.
Mechanical problems along the way, what were your most difficult to overcome?
The boat was pretty simple, so the mechanical mo the bulk of mechanics on the boat was the engine. So my mechanical challenges were the diesel engine related. So I got pretty good at fixing them.
What kind of diesel was it?
This one was a one cylinder, 7.5 horsepower Buick engine. It was a little thing, but it was endlessly breaking. And so I was endlessly learning how to fix every new problem.
Did you? What kind of
I've
boat was
it? Apply to many engines ever since. that was Diesel Mechanics 101, 201.
So you had a book and learned as you went along?
What, with the engine?
Yes. Did you take any classes ahead of time or learn?
No, I learned as I went. I learned as one problem arose and got resolved, I learned from that, and then it was always a new problem afterwards. But I had a book, yeah. But then I learned from people who helped. It was a very small, simple engine. So all the other sailors out there, they kind of like tinkering with a little one like that. And when I couldn't fix it, I sailed. It was a sailboat. I actually sailed a lot without an engine.
So I had a question. I'm trying to think of what it was. What kind of boat was it? First of all, was it what was the design of the boat?
It's a Contessa 26. You know it?
I'm not familiar with it. No.
It's the old bulk boat design. There were several of them used in the first O-Star races. They're good old boats, and the folk boats are wooden. And this was just based on that design, a full keel and low freeboard, fast little safe boat. It was a good boat. She was very good. She was small, but a really nice boat.
How did you communicate?
I didn't.
So
I had a VHF radio. If I saw another ship, I called them.
Okay.
Remember, this is in the days before GPS and sat phones, and my navigation was a sextant, and communication. If I came within sight of a ship, my communication was pretty much line of sight. And when I got ashore, it was collect calls home and mails, letters with stamps.
Okay.
And if people wanted to communicate with me, they had to write letters and stick stamps on them too, and send them to Poste Restante and General Deliveries. And
so you just look for your mail whenever you arrive at a new port. Then did you have your ports laid out ahead of time where you're going to go, or did they arrive? Did you choose as you went along?
I had a general idea before I left, and then as I went along, it modified. Like, I originally planned to go around South Africa there, around the Cape of Good Hope. That was the original plan. And then that was a big change, was to go up via the Red Sea and Med instead. So that was the big change. Otherwise, everything else, like the islands in the South Pacific, I figured when I got there, I'd be talking to people and knowing where to go, and based on what I heard from the grapevine.
Longest passage was what, about 30 days?
50 days.
50 days.
That was the North Atlantic.
The North Atlantic, oh. Mm. Coming across and coming, so you didn't stop in the Azores on your, I guess you wouldn't. You'd go down to the Caribbean and come back up that way then.
No, I went straight across, and I did pass just south of the Azores, but when I came from, I'm looking up at a map here. When I came across from Gibraltar to New York, it was already October, getting a little late, and the risk of storms was getting bigger, and so no dawdling, straight home.
Okay, that's a long passage then. I went across, and it took me 22 days to the Azores, but I was going pretty much with the wind. And another,
you got a little stream with you going that way. So
that's right, yeah, so you were fighting the current. And it was a little more of a tight beat for you then, wasn't it?
It was very weather system reliant. Going across that way, south of the prevailing winds. I stayed south of the Gulf Stream, so that's also south of the prevailing winds. So it was really weather from the fronts that came through, the depressions. Just kind of used them. So there were a lot of calms. Like, there was one full week of calm, which adds to the overall time.
Okay.
I wasn't ever racing. It's like I never beat any speed records on this trip. If I didn't feel like doing a sail change, I finished at night. I didn't go out on deck in the middle of the night to take out a reef. I would just wait until morning, and I wasn't racing anybody.
Any sicknesses or illnesses along the way that took you a while to get over?
Not really, no. I mean, I got my share of actually it was interesting. It's pretty bacteria free environment out on the ocean. So every time I made a landfall, just about every time I'd get a cold. I'd be wide open to the bugs floating around. But nothing really bad. You know, I had intestinal things a couple times and I got very tired and skinny in the Red Sea in the Mediterranean. I needed to rest and eat better when I got to shore, but nothing life-threatening, no.
Do you keep in touch of any with any of the people you met along the way, except for your ex-husband, I guess?
Yeah, there are a couple other people who I keep in touch with.
Do you go
Like,
out on speaking it? Do you go and talk to people about your trip? Do people ask you to come and talk about your trip?
yeah, I used to do a lot of it. There's a lot less of it now, but yes, I do. Today I'm talking to you about it, right? And
That's
then
right.
tomorrow I'm talking to a school via Skype with my slides for a gr there's a children's book version of Maiden Voyage. So they've read that and it's an ESL class. So I'll be showing them and talking to them about the trip. And then I'm going to another school in another couple weeks. So there's a lot of schools and kids who like to hear the story. It's a good story. I've been
It's
telling
a
it for almost a quarter of a century now.
great story to tell. It's a great life experience you had.
It was very good. And that's, I mean, I owe it all to my dad for having had the vision and the imagination and the faith and the courage, all those things that a parent would need to, you know, I never realized what a huge thing it was for him to be doing. I just figured it was another thing my dad's an unusual person. I was like, yeah, whatever, grandpa. But now, as a parent of teenagers, I realize what a big deal it was.
It was. It sounds like, but you were you? Do you think you were? He was living vicariously a lot through you, though. I mean, it sounds like he really enjoyed he knew you would have a wonderful experience and a way of him for living your experiences as well.
He may have, but it's not, but partly vicariously, but it's not like he's never done anything on his own. He's tried to do things as well. And he's kind of like that for his kids and the people who are close to him. He's very encouraging for them to reach. It's all about reaching and stepping out of your comfort zone and going a little further and doing things, you know, he's all about the story. It's all about the story for him, whether it's his own story or the story of the people who are close to him.
Well, thank you very much, Tanya. I'm going to put a link to your website and the show notes on this, and I appreciate your time. If you have anything else to say, you feel free. I really enjoy talking to you.
Okay, or if you think of anything else you want to ask, you can. We're Skype friends now, so.
That's right. You've got my Skype number. Thank you very much.
Right. Bye, friends.
Bye bye. I have posted the link to Tanya's website, which also gives a link to her book in the show notes. Also, I want to encourage the listeners to please submit your own stories in an audio format. Send them to Franz at traveltradeexchange.com in an MP3 format. I'll review them, and as long as there's nothing offensive in your stories, I will post them on the podcast. If you'd like to have an interview done, contact me again at the same email address, Franz@traveltradeexchange.com, and I will contact you and we'll conduct an interview. Thank you very much. And remember, you will be remembered by the stories you tell.